Welcome to the Speak Up Talk Radio Network, home of the Firebird Book Awards, the Positive Change Podcast Awards Hall of Fame, and this podcast, Authors on Fire. I am your hostess, Pat Rulo. Today, I have a returning guest to share with you and some positive messages. He is author Bill DeBarba. Bill is a four-decade entrepreneur. He began the classic back bedroom office business, developing custom software for local companies. His company, Businessware Services, Inc., grew until he had a staff developing products and providing services to a base of loyal customers around the country. In his 40 years of ownership and management, he achieved a great deal of success. And one measure of that success is the fact that never in 40 years did any customers resort to legal action to resolve issues, because he learned how to recognize problems from the other's point of view. And by engaging them in the process of acknowledging thoughts, understanding feelings, and taking the actions directed to responding to these issues, he helped them solve the problem and retain the customer. He is a highly skilled public speaker with many years of experience, and his expertise in business and other organizational contexts allow him to effectively align with your specific goals. And I am honored to have another opportunity to learn and share him with you. So welcome back to the network, Bill.
Thank you. Pleasure to be here.
It's always a pleasure to talk with you. I'm so appreciative of this time together. All right. Well, we discussed your book, The Process of Living, back in 2020, and you have recently completed the second edition. And I was thinking about that process because right now I'm in the process of revising one of my books for a second edition. And I thought, you know, while it might seem like a straightforward task since the initial work and planning are already done, I found that it actually required a significant amount of time and careful consideration to make the changes. So before we delve into your book, I know that many other authors make changes and have second editions. Maybe share your process of reworking the book.
Well, it's kind of interesting. I was just thinking a moment ago about how when we had the last session together, that you said to me, so what is your next book going to be? And I didn't think it was going to be a revision of the first, but that's what it came out to be. And I think the process that went through was a matter of really looking at what I had done and said and how I had said it, and then applying it and realizing, wait a minute, I could have done this better. I think the flow was one of the most important parts. And I left some things out that would have made it better. Now, as I told you the last time we spoke, I got to speak to organizations, the most interesting being prisons. I spoke in front of a women's prison and a men's prison on a regular basis. It was like a once-a-month thing. And they had an amazing second chance program. And I explained that the last time about what a wonderful thing it is to try to give people a real chance of moving forward. And part of my role was to give them some of the ideas that they could do it. But what I recognized was when I started putting together the flow based on the book, I recognized that the flow wasn't quite right. I jumped ahead to how to do it, how to use it before explaining how it worked. And I didn't even notice that when I wrote the book. And there were some other things. Some of the people said to me, you know, you got into the technical part of this, tuning forks, one vibrates the other, signals of radios and so on and so forth. They said, you lost me there in the sense that I didn't go any further than that because I couldn't really follow it. Well, this time what I did is when I got to the point where I had that in the book, I basically said, this is how it works. If you'd like to learn more, go to Appendix A. And if you don't want to do that, just take my word for it and keep reading. Mm-hmm. So I didn't leave it in a place where they got stuck at that point. Wow. And a lot of the experiences, the prison and the two prisons and other places, right now I'm doing a lot of presentations at St. Mary's Food Bank. All of those added to the information that I learned from them as much as they might have learned from me.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that is so fascinating and important, I think, to, I guess, stop and take the time and listen to reader feedback and actually take some action.
Yeah, that's true. And you're getting the reader feedback, not just the reader, but the presentation feedback and all of it mm-hmm. from different groups, very, very different groups. Mm-hmm. All of it contributes. And believe it or not, there is a way you can do it that will make it more meaningful for all. But until you experience that, it's not that easy to do. It's not that easy to recognize is what it comes down to.
Right, right. So after you recognized it, what about the process of redoing it? Did you find that, okay, I've got good bones here and I just need to change a few things here and there? Or did you find yourself actually doing some big rewrites?
In segments of it, I found myself doing big rewrites. And I'll be honest with you, I don't know how far, Pat, you've gone with your revision of the book, but it was harder than the original. Mm-hmm. And when I say that, I mean that I didn't want to lose what I had, but I wanted to add what I needed mm-hmm. and integrating all of that. And reviewing, how did this work? Well, you know, I gave it to my wife. I said, what do you think? And she's not shy. She gave me good feedback as to what's working and what isn't. In some ways, it was harder to do. Mm-hmm. And I was kind of surprised by that. When I started, I didn't think it would be that way. But yes, it did take me longer, and it did take a lot more revisions before I really got the thing to flow the way I intended it to do.
Yes, yes, I agree. I agree. It's actually a learning experience for you as the author as well. I know I always have a tendency to put everything first, like you said. I just put it out there because that's kind of my personality. It's like, let's get this out. Let's get it done. But sometimes you really have to take that step back and analyze it from a different, slower perspective.
That's true. And a lot of the times what happens, is, like I said, is I learned from other people's reactions to it that without that, I couldn't have possibly known. And I can't get that reaction until I put the original one out.
Mm-hmm. Exactly, exactly. So that was the reason why you decided to do the second edition, was because of the feedback or what you perceived to be a better way to present the book?
Yes. In fact, what I do, I like to do PowerPoint presentations, but I don't use a lot of words. I don't want people reading the screen mm-hmm. and not listening to me. But I also recognize that some people respond better to something visual than something verbal. Right. So I gave them both. Mm-hmm. I put up images on the screen that exemplified what I was trying to say. It was doing that, putting that together, where I first recognized this: the book isn't flowing right. I had to change the flow that I presented in the, and made in the presentation. Mm-hmm. Because that's how I learned, step one, that something had to change. Now, I learned a lot more in addition to that by making the presentations and getting the feedback. And I sought the feedback everywhere I could get it. Mm-hmm. And if you've got a strong ego and you think your way is the right way, you don't belong in this business.
I was just going to say, you're very brave to solicit feedback because it's not easy to receive.
You're right. It isn't. You know, there's a part of me that goes, gosh, I worked so hard on this. You'd be telling me it's wrong.
I know.
But it is. I mean, you can, and that's the only way you can make it better.
Oh, I love that. So, so true. We've got to put our pride on a shelf sometimes and work for the better good, I guess.
Yes.
Oh, my gosh.
That's true.
All right. I know we talked about it before, but for those who didn't listen or haven't listened to our first conversation, let's talk about the book. It's titled The Process of Living. What exactly is the process of living?
If you stop and think about who we are, all of it comes down to three things. We have thoughts, we have feelings, and we take action. We think, we do, we feel. That's it. There ain't anything else. All of what, our life consists of those three things and how we apply them. But just like anything else, if you've got things not in agreement with each other, not consistent with each other, then you're sort of going in circles. You're kind of in a spin, and nothing seems to move forward. So the idea behind the book is to say, step back, look at these things, pay attention. What's going on? One of the examples I gave was from my business, when my business had to do with software development, and we had the clients, as you mentioned earlier, around the country. And, you know, in software especially, something's going to go wrong at some point in time. Sometimes the problem's with the software, sometimes the problem is with people not being trained correctly. But there were times when I would get phone calls from business owners, and most of the time, I have to admit, they were very nice and just looking for help. But there were some who got extremely aggressive, who threatened lawsuits and said, your program is terrible and it doesn't do this right, and so on and so forth. And I would just wait until they took a breath and say, okay, now can we talk about what's the problem? What actually is the problem? And once I started to do that and started to pay attention and ask questions about the details of the problem, that's when they relaxed, because they saw that I was really paying attention. Mm-hmm. But when they started, they had feelings. In most cases, they were feelings of fear. Because if this program didn't work right, they couldn't get through their payroll and their billing or whatever else they were doing. What I did was let them recognize that and take them off the fear and into the trust. Mm-hmm. But I did that because I was recognizing what was going on. I could have just as easily gotten angry at them and saying, well, you know, if you're going to treat me like this, forget it, you're on your own, or things to that effect. And that isn't what's going to work for anybody. So one of the things that I told you about the last time we got together, and very proud of, within 40 years, I did not have to deal with a single lawsuit. I never had to talk to a lawyer. And boy, I was happy about that. And this is what resulted from recognizing that even though they were expressing anger, they were feeling fear. And I had a better chance of solutions if I addressed the fear and let them know, yes, I'm here, I'm on your side, we're going to get this fixed, mm-hmm. without responding to their anger. That is what works when you recognize what's going on, not just in your dealings with other people, but for yourself, mm-hmm. for what's happening in your life. Mm-hmm. When you think that this isn't my fault, this is because of him, because of her, because of what she said, because of what he did, fine. You want to give them the control of your life? Go ahead. Your subconscious mind will cooperate. It'll go ahead and bring to you everything you need to give up the control of your life. Mm-hmm. But when you recognize that you're the one that's drawing that in, then you can fix it. Right. What's the old expression? First step in solving a problem is recognizing there is one.
Right, exactly. Well, going back to your dealing with software issues, what a basic tenet in customer service.
Well, it's true. And one of the reasons is they can't fix it themselves. Mm-hmm. You know, if you've got a leak in your sink, you might be able to fix it yourself. But if you've got a problem in the software that you've bought or put into your business, not likely. You've got to get help. And how you approach getting that help makes a big difference. Mm-hmm.
Well, so important for both sides, because I know sometimes if I have an issue and when you call for help, you tend to be so frustrated that you may come off as being, like, as you say, angry, when instead, if you were to soften the approach and really give thought to it and speak maybe in a different manner, you would get a different response. And likewise, the person on the phone has to do as you did to help resolve it and let them know that you are on their side.
Yeah, that's very true. And I've often thought about that. I've seen people argue with somebody at a store. You're supposed to have this. How come you don't have it? I read in the paper, or I saw online that you're supposed to have it. As opposed to, and a lot of times, the clerk will shut down. Mm-hmm. Sorry, that's the way it is.
Yep.
Whereas if you say something like, oh, gosh, I was hoping you had this. Can you tell me when it's going to be delivered? Do you know if you're going to have one in the next couple of weeks? Then they're more likely to go pick up the phone and say, hey, can you tell me when this is going to come around? In other words, they're more willing to help you if you treat them with respect.
Exactly, exactly. So we're talking about thoughts, feelings, and action and how they interact with each other. And I think that's probably something most people don't think of. You might just think of it as a standalone pillar. You know, there's thought, there's feelings, there's action, but they all work with each other.
Absolutely, absolutely. And one of the things I bring out in the book is that these three things have got to communicate with each other. Mm-hmm. If you've got thoughts going one way, feelings going another, and what you're doing yet going a third, which is kind of what I just explained,
right.
That's a problem. That's a problem. But the problem also is the fact that these three things don't speak the same language. Mm. I mean, action is movement of some kind. It could be as little as raising your eyebrows. It could be running down the street. It could be anything that requires some kind of a movement. Thoughts are pictures in your mind or words or, you know, we're familiar with our thoughts, or hopefully we are. But feelings, Feelings are hard to describe. If I tell you that I was hurt by something, and you think of that something and say, well, that's not that big of a deal, then you're not really understanding what the feelings are that I have. And a lot of times, that's a problem within us. We don't even recognize what our feelings are doing when they are the most important of the three. Mm-hmm. They are because they are honest. They are honest. You can convince yourself to think anything you want, do anything you want, but if you go to the feelings level, that's where it's honest. Mm-hmm. That's not going to try and fool you. And learning how to pay attention to that and give it the respect that it deserves is, well, it's a learning thing. It's something you have to learn how to do.
That's now, also scary.
Yes, it can be. Uh-huh. But like I spoke about, one of the best ways to do that is to try to separate the thoughts out for a little while. Because without doing that, it's hard to pay attention. The thoughts are shouting over the top of the feelings. How do you do that? Well, meditation. Mm-hmm. A lot of people talk about it. A lot of people have different ways that they do it. But the bottom line is your meditation's major goal is to just quiet the mind. Not an easy task.
Yes.
And you have to practice it. It's like I mentioned the last time we spoke, kind of like going to the gym. You can't go two or three times and think you're going to be in shape. You've got to keep doing it. Right. You've got to keep practicing it. And, you know, I'm a very type A personality. I mean, my mind is going 100 miles an hour constantly. To be able to quiet that down, some days, as long as I've been meditating, there are still days when I will sit down and after a couple of minutes, I say, all right, never mind. I'll come back later. I'll do it a little later. Mm-hmm. And then there's other times when you just get this feeling of peacefulness that comes over you. Now you can really get in touch with those feelings, the honesty of them. And if you do that, then as you move forward with your thoughts and actions, you're going to be more in line. Mm-hmm. They're going to be working together. That's how you get results.
Mm-hmm. So fascinating. I think I tend to do that when I feel like I'm racing around in my brain. I just jump up sometimes from my desk and I go outside and walk and just go outside in nature. And as you say, it's probably a form of meditation in itself.
It is. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Anything that will allow your mind to rest for a while is an effective form of meditation because that's the whole point. The whole point is to get the mind out of the picture for a while.
Right.
And not an easy thing to do.
No. Nope.
But it is very, very important to make the process of living work for you. I tell people all the time, when you are going for a goal, pay attention to the feelings you have when you think about that goal. You want a new house? What does it look like? How is the kitchen laid out? Is it going to be next to the family room or is it going to be a separate room all by itself? How many bedrooms? See yourself walking in. See it as though you were there. I don't mean watching yourself from a distance. I mean the same way you see when you walk into your house every day. What am I seeing in my mind that this house is going to look like? How am I feeling? Pay attention. Pay attention to what that thought, what that vision has for you. You are consistent with your thoughts and your feelings. Your actions will take care of themselves.
Mm-hmm.
You will get all the signals you need, all the information you need through your subconscious mind will pay attention, and it will find, just like your radio, you find the right station. It's kind of old, I guess, but Wi-Fi or whatever, okay? Pick a technology, I don't care what it is. You will have the ability to be tuned in, and your subconscious mind is more powerful than most people think. You know, you think in terms of, gee, well, how lucky I was, or what a coincidence. And no. That luck and coincidence is what you draw mm-hmm. into your life by your true feelings. So being in touch with the feelings is very important in any effort to achieve any goal, whether the goal is a removal of a bad habit, something you're doing that's not good for you, or the goal can be to achieve something. You may want to go to college and you want to have a degree in engineering, or you may just want something in your life that's not there right now. That is how you're going to get it when you are able to pay attention, So what the feelings are when you see that goal in your mind. Mm-hmm.
The power of visualization is huge and so underestimated. I think there's so many studies out there that show that the brain really can't tell the difference if it's on a beach in Tahiti or whether you're imagining that. So, you know, you might as well put your brain in positive places.
Exactly. And that's where your intuition comes into play. It pays attention.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And you may very well be on a beach in Tahiti, not just in your imagination.
Yeah, exactly. I believe that. So we talk about the three pillars. Are most people stuck in one of those pillars?
Oh, yeah. Like we were talking about, thoughts. That's the one that we'll get stuck in.
Mm-hmm.
We will convince ourselves that what somebody did or said really hurt us and it's their fault, when in point of fact, it was our feelings about what they said that hurt us. When we're ready to let go of giving them the control of our feelings, then we are ready to make the progress we need to whatever it is that we want to achieve. Just like on the phone with the angry customer. If I allowed their feeling of anger to affect me, I don't know what they're thinking. I'm the only one that can help them. Why are they treating me like this? The heck with them. Okay, if that's the approach I took, then I would have spoken to a lot more lawyers.
Mm-hmm.
The bottom line is you don't let the other person's actions, feelings, or thoughts control yours.
Such important information here. I'm so glad we're having this conversation. I love that we're talking also about the subconscious mind. It's such a powerful, powerful gift that many of us choose not to recognize or engage with. So I have affirmations all over the place too. I have them posted everywhere. And you know, your subconscious mind works on those without, I don't even notice that I'm seeing them, but my mind does.
It does. Yeah. And what you focus on with your mind is what the subconscious pays attention
mm-hmm.
to.
Absolutely. Yep. Yep. Yep.
Yeah.
Now, in one of your blog posts, you talked about learned behaviors, and it made me wonder, are all behaviors learned? Where do they come from? And how do we get rid of the ones we don't want?
That's a very good question. Learned behaviors are things that we repeat enough times that we no longer have to think about them. I always talk about the baby learning how to walk. There's a lot of focus on that child, or the child has a lot of focus, I should say, in trying to keep their balance, in trying to make sure they're moving in the right direction and having to pick themselves up. And the subconscious mind starts to get the picture and says, oh, I get it. When he thinks walk, even if I don't know the word yet, then I'm supposed to do this. I'm supposed to get these signals out to the muscles to do these things. Well, guess what? Once that happens enough time, the subconscious takes over. You don't have to think about it on a conscious level. You just simply stand up and walk. That is how all learned behaviors are formed. I talk about the subconscious filing cabinet. You know, the folders are put in. Walking. Ah, here's what I have to do. Well, unfortunately, that can come about to a number of different ways. Gambling, smoking, alcohol, drugs. I mean, there are a lot of them. And it's the same exact process. You do it enough times that you don't even think about it. You've already lit that seventh cigarette without even remembering the first six. That's where it gets difficult to get rid of. How difficult? Well, how long have you been doing it? How intense are you on it? Finding a way to get away from it is, there's a number of them. And I could, it's in the book, all the different ways you can do it. But the bottom line is you have to retrain. And really, if you've got a solid learned behavior that's not good, you really should find another one to take its place. The subconscious doesn't do well with just get rid of this. Give me something else. You know, instead of going out drinking after work every day, join a bowling league. Go hiking. Go for a walk. Put something else in its place. And when you're able to do that, the old behavior gradually will go away.
Excellent. Thank you for addressing that. And all of these tips and information are available in your book. So I'm so hoping that people are taking just these little snippets of things we're talking about today and realize that it's all in one concise place in the process of living. So what is the most important message you wish that your readers come away with? What do you hope they feel or think or do once they close your book?
Know that your life is in your control. That's the single biggest thing. We are a society, we are a world
not just our society. We are a world of blamers. The problem is because of you. The problem to me, my life, is what you did. If you get nothing else out of this, take control of your life. Don't give it to somebody else. That, to me, is the most important point. And by the way, if you've read the other book, the original, read this one because it flows so much better.
Yes, the second edition.
Yes,
head over for that one. So you do a lot of live speaking events, obviously. It sounds like that you really enjoy those as well. If someone wants you to speak to their group, are you available to do that?
Absolutely. Absolutely. My website is theprocessofliving.com. My email address is bill@theprocessofliving.com. I mean, if you get those five words, you can get just about anything to me. And you get in touch with me, tell me what it is you want to do, because I've adjusted focus based on the group that I'm with. Mm-hmm. When I was speaking to a business gathering that I was a part of, that I had joined and I also spoke at, the focus that I had was different than I had with the church group. Certainly different what I had from prisons,
right,
and St. Mary Food Bank. This is a different, you know, you have to know your audience. You have to know what is likely to trigger them that's different than would trigger a different audience. So that's, I consider myself very strong at that. I really want to learn about who I'm going to be speaking to. What is the trigger? What are the issues? What are the problems? What are the strengths? Now I can adjust this because it's universally applicable.
Mm-hmm.
I can just simply adjust the focus that's more meaningful to the group that I'm speaking to.
Yep. You are in a unique situation here in that the whole world is your audience. It's not like, oh, I can only speak to these people, because we're all living and we all have thoughts, feelings, and take action. We do things. And so we need to know how to align those three pillars and work in harmony.
I'm going to send you out as my salesperson because you just nailed it right there.
Wow, I'm good, right?
Yes, you are. I knew that. That's why we're having this conversation.
So funny. So I asked this last time, and I'm going to ask it again. Are you working on another book?
No. Well, I'll put it this way. I sold my business. It's been, 6 years this month. 6 years ago, I sold my business. I'm at an age, which I'm not going to share.
Okay.
But I am at an age where I'm supposed to be retired. And I have this discussion with my wife on a fairly regular basis, which basically starts with, when are you going to retire? So, I haven't got an answer to that yet, but starting another book certainly is not going to get me in that direction. The book is really the trigger for my speaking. This is what I love to do.
Yes.
I love being in front of groups of people. I love answering questions. I love seeing how these thoughts and ideas affect them.
Mm-hmm.
Because I can't do that with the book. Somebody buys the book, and unless they get in touch with me, I'll never know.
Yeah.
So I just so much enjoy the speaking, and I just think that that's where I want to focus my attention. And the book is, like I said, the lead into that.
Yes, I get that. I get that. I always encourage people who have businesses or business-related aspects to their life to write a book, because that is the calling card. That will get you out into places you couldn't get into without a book, and gives you opportunities for these speaking events and meeting people. And I think you can change, as you say, you can change more lives that way, almost one person is at a time as you're speaking to them, because you're kind of developing a small relationship with every person in the audience.
That's true. That really is mm-hmm. true. And it's really, the quality of the book is the calling card, in the sense that, hey, this person makes sense. Mm-hmm. I like the way they're going. I'd like to have them
yes,
talk to us.
Absolutely.
That's really what I'm going for.
Yep. Well, have fun with that, because I know how fun speaking events are. So if you would give us again your contact information so folks can not only get a copy of your book, but perhaps reach out to you and have you enlighten them and their groups.
All my contact information is on my website. It's my phone number, my email address, which I just said is the same as my website. And everything you need to know to get a hold of me is at theprocessofliving.com. And I encourage people to read the blogs, because those blogs give you a sense of how I see these concepts applied in situations that I describe in the blogs. So it's more of a, hey, You read the book? Okay. These are the ways it applies.
Yes, I read your blog posts and gleaned a lot from them, and I mentioned a couple as we were speaking here. So yes, I encourage folks to go to your website, theprocessofliving.com, read the entire site, check out the blog posts, get a copy of his book, theprocessofliving.com with Bill DeBarba. Oh, so fun to talk with you. I'm glad we had this other second opportunity. It was a second edition and a second chance for me to be able to spend time with you and share you with our audience. So thank you so much, Bill.
You're very welcome, and thank you for having me with you here.